One of my colleagues said, oh my gosh, you're going to talk about divorce on your first day at a congregation? And I've actually known people who say, oh, I don't like to preach on texts like that. But I said, look, this is in the Bible. It's good news. This is the good news of Jesus Christ. So let's talk about the good news. Well, first of all, we need to acknowledge something. We have to acknowledge that these gospel texts have been used at times to hurt people. This gospel text about divorce at times have hurt people because it says God's will for us is not divorce. And yet we know we live in a society where half of all marriages do end in divorce. And then we have to acknowledge that there are also people who have been hurt by our Old Testament text today. Because this is a text that seems to say, well, some people can't marry. And now we know we live in this society where we're looking at same-gender marriage. This is being hotly debated. And so we have to acknowledge that there are scripture texts that have, in fact, been misused over time in order to separate people, to judge, to control, to scapegoat. So that's where we get that question of, huh, how is this the good news of Jesus Christ? Well, these texts are ones that remind us why we study the Bible. We have to study the Bible. We're called to do that as Christians. And we're called to study in community, as well as individually. Of course, we can all go home and read our Bibles, and we should do that. And I'm not going to ask for a show of hands of how many do, but I'm hoping people do. But we are called to also study in community, because we can gain insight specifically from looking at what the original hearers of these texts and stories would have understood. You know, a lot gets lost in the translation because we don't understand that time and place. And so if you think about it this way, when we are studying what this would have meant to the original hearers, in a way we're studying in community, even with the people who lived 2,000 years ago and heard words from the mouth of Jesus. And that then illuminates how we study together in our time and place with our current brothers and sisters. So we're studying not only together, but with all the faithful who have come before us. So we need to look at our present context and the past context. Let's start there. So let's think about what was marriage and divorce to people in first century Palestine. Because it wasn't exactly like it is for us. All right, there's four things that's important to lift up. So the first thing is that marriage in first century Palestine was not so much a love pact between two people. It was almost more in the realm of a business relationship between two families. So there were political and economic ramifications for these two families coming together. You know, you had to make a good marriage. And therefore, if those families were to separate, that also had political and economic ramifications, right? So that was the first thing, very different from how we view it today of finding your soulmate. Well, secondly, this idea that you could marry and then at some point trade mates, this actually was more something that happened in the realm of the wealthy. See, poor people didn't have time or energy or money to be divorcing. So this also had a class connotation. It wasn't something that everyone was doing. That's the second. Number three, and I'll bet you know this one, only men could divorce. It didn't matter how abusive a marriage might be for a woman, she could not divorce her husband. There was no legal recourse that she had. So that's three. Number four, there are two schools of thought about why men could divorce their wives. Now, here's the minority view. You can only divorce your wife if she is an adulterer. And remember, she can't divorce her husband if he's an adulterer. But some schools of thought and the minority view was that's the only reason you can end a marriage. The majority view was that you could end a marriage to your wife for any reason. She didn't make enough lentil soup tonight. She's out of there. You know, she's gained a little too much weight. She's too old. I want somebody younger and thinner. Here's your divorce papers. So this is the setting in first century Palestine. Now, that's not to say there weren't loving marriages, by the way, but that we're talking about the legalities here. So it's with this context that the Pharisees are coming to Jesus and asking him about divorce law. And we read in the text that he's doing this specifically they're doing it to trap Jesus. They're not just trying to be educated. They're trying to trap Jesus. So remember, too, that John the Baptist, by this point in Mark's gospel, John the Baptist has already been beheaded for speaking out against Herod marrying his brother's wife. So this is a hot button issue. So let's see, what does Jesus answer? Jesus doesn't. They ask him a question, but the first thing Jesus does is ask another question. So Jesus says, well, what did Moses say? And the Pharisees, they know this. Well, Moses allowed a man to divorce his wife. This is a teachable moment for Jesus. So Jesus now says, well, Moses allowed this because of your hardness of heart. The fact is, human beings, we hurt one another. Human beings hurt one another, and so we have to have laws in order to protect those who are most vulnerable. And these two stories that are yoked together today show us that the most vulnerable are often women and children. So Jesus says this to the Pharisees, and later when he's with just the disciples, they continue to ask about this, and it is at this point that he says something that had to have been absolutely shocking to them. He gives them this shocking new perspective, and this is what we miss because we don't understand that time and place. Here's what we hear. Okay, Jesus says, if a man divorces his wife and marries another, he commits adultery. If a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. What just happened there? Jesus said, a man could commit adultery. A man could hurt his wife just the way she might hurt him if she committed adultery. And then she could divorce him. But what Jesus is saying is, people, all this hurting of one another, this is not God's desire for us. This is not God's desire for us. So Jesus then reframes the entire issue. He rejects the fact that the question is it legal to marry? And we have to understand, too, there's a sub-question there, and the sub-question is, and how can I get the best deal out of it? No, but you know, the Pharisees, they're coming at this with the hardness of heart, of what does this mean? What are the legalities? And Jesus says the question is, what does God intend for humans in marriage? Why do we marry? What is God's intention for us? Jesus doesn't want to look at the legalities. He wants to look at relationship because Jesus is all about relationship. He says, God created us to be in relation with God, God and people, to be in relationship with one another, and even to be in relationship with the created world. And I say this because Jesus brings up the second creation story in which, and we often miss this, we know God formed man out of the soil. God also formed the animals out of the soil. We are interconnected with all the created world. But then God's desire is also that we have this special partnership, this marriage with another person in which this love is meant to be as self-giving and as unconditional as God's love for us. This is God's desire for our relationships. But we know that as humans, our relationships are fragile. Sometimes they get damaged. Sometimes they get broken. Sometimes they get broken beyond repair. Divorce hurts. Divorce hurts the couple. It hurts the children. But sometimes staying together may be even more devastating. I wonder about that phrase, hardness of heart. Maybe there would be circumstances where it would be hardness of heart to say that the people must stay together. It's true that divorce in any society is a sign of human brokenness in a broken world, but it is not the only such sign. I mean, look around us. Signs of brokenness, loneliness, addiction, crime, war, all of these are signs that we're not living in the garden anymore. We are not living in the peace and harmony and wholeness that God created us for. And so, God came to us. God came to us in order to restore that peace and that harmony and that wholeness. God came and entered into this world, entered into our very messy lives, suffered with us, suffered for us, all this to show us that suffering is not our destiny. Our destiny is life. Our destiny is wholeness and healing. So sure, we have these many signs all around us that the world is broken, but guess what? We are surrounded by symbols of God's miraculous grace. We are surrounded by them. The manger, the cross, the empty tomb, the font, the table, the bread, the wine, the church on earth, the people gathered, being the face of Christ. These are signs of God's miraculous grace. Jesus' arms are open to all of us, like I told the children. Doesn't matter who we are. Jesus is saying, come to me. I'm already here. I'm already here, and you are already mine. What does this text have to say to us today in our time and place? Do we hear it like the Pharisees with our hearts hard? Are we looking at legalities, at how to control or scapegoat or judge another group? Or like Jesus, can we ask questions in community? Can we ask God to help us in the discernment of what is God's intention for us as individuals and as people of God? And ultimately, like Jesus, can we come to this shocking new perspective? Do we hear good news in this? Do we hear the good news that Jesus did not come just to show us how to live in brokenness, which would be a gift, but how to live beyond it? Knowing that we are meant for a resurrection life, for a life of peace, a life of harmony and wholeness. So maybe some of us here today are hurting because we're divorced. Maybe we're hurting because we're not divorced. Maybe we're hurting because we're not married or because we can't marry. Maybe we're hurting because we're lonely. Or addicted, or we're liars and thieves, or maybe we're gossips and control freaks. Whatever it is that is keeping us in bondage, today, hear the good news. The good news is that Jesus comes to us. Jesus comes to us and speaks that word of grace, come to me. Come to me. You are welcome. I will heal you. My touch can heal you. You are welcomed. You are loved. You are mine. You are mine. Amen.